Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
There is a mindset that you have. You're not the creator of this mindset, but you are the one that experiences the misery that's born of it. And the mindset that we all suffer from to one degree or another is the idea that our days are intended to be spent struggling to overcome an enemy. You watched your parents do it. You saw them lash out at one another when they couldn't get even with those who had hurt them. You saw them try to fix people that had somehow frustrated their wishes. Everywhere you went in the world, you could see people who were either on the rise to the call of battle, who were going to step out and somehow or other achieve that victory at last, or who had been thoroughly trounced by something and so were wallowing in some kind of self-pity or a feeling of defeat and despair that comes with having lost some struggle that has been named as essential to one's happiness. It's an amazing thing, really, that a person can live for 50 or 60 or 80, 90 years and wake up every single day and for the first batch of those years be convinced that the purpose of this life is to enter the battle and overcome through the struggle, and then near the end of their life to resent themselves and the world that wouldn't let them live the battles and relive the ones that they did win and try to forget the ones that they couldn't. It's not meant to be like that. You are not meant to spend your life fearful of what the outcome will be of whatever the next struggle is. That's not how you're supposed to spend your life. And yet if you examine yourselves, which is what we must do in every one of our talks, and when we're not together, we must examine our lives. What you'll see is that you don't know what life is without that. There's so much that is silly and wasted when people gather in the name of something higher because they speak as though there is some understanding amongst themselves about what this higher world would be. As though they already understood what the new struggle that they're going to engage in is going to produce for them. And how they, meaning that particular self, that one who is always caught up in something, how he or she is going to emerge from this battle that they've been in, one day emerge. And it's a funny thing in a way, because every human being, almost every human being, has had instances in his or her life where they reach the end of their own struggle with someone or something. And in reaching the end of the struggle with that addiction or that problem or that person or that dream or that fear, whatever it is, in reaching the end of that struggle, the reason that it was so abhorrent to them, the reason they couldn't quite just stop, is because they were absolutely unsure of who they would be should the struggle be resolved in any way other than I won or I lost. Because when we win, we're great. And when we win, we set new parameters are set inside of us because we have acquired new imaginary powers by which we're going to go out and rock the world with what we just were able to do. If I could do it there, by God, I can do it someplace else. Or when we lose, piece of cake. Just get back into your bedroom and cut off a big piece of cake and put it in the ice cream carton and just eat till you can't eat anymore. Wallow in misery, call your friends, cry to yourself, fall into a funk until suddenly you can't stand that anymore, and then right out of the darkness of that terrible despair emerges the next thing that you'll struggle with. And that's life on this planet. But there is evidence. There is evidence, and it's slight evidence. And I want, you know, I'm going to tell you something. If I had my personal druthers, and I don't know what a druther is, but if I had one, well, who, you know what a druther is? If I had my personal druthers, there would be no talks in my past. There would be nothing that I've ever said that would be recorded anywhere or written anywhere if I had my druthers. Because the truth of the matter is that, and this connects with what I'm leading to about winning the struggle or losing it, the fact of the matter is there have been moments, yes, they have been rare, in your life where you couldn't win, but you knew you must not lose. Where you couldn't put down the bottle, you couldn't stop talking to people, you couldn't stop fighting or hating, you couldn't stop resenting, you couldn't stop the greed. You knew you couldn't. You'd struggled with it, maybe. Or you struggled with trying to get something that would allow you to feel different about yourself, but you, no matter what you did, you couldn't get it. But you knew in your heart of hearts that you were supposed to be a different human being. You knew in your heart of hearts that you weren't supposed to fall into that despair, or that funk, or that drug, or that drink. You knew in your heart of hearts you mustn't go there, but you also found out from your struggle that you couldn't go where you wanted to go. And because you stayed in that struggle, unable to win and unable to let yourself lose, there came a time where there was nothing else for you to do other than to set the struggle down altogether. Or more accurately, it set itself down. There was no further for you to go, nothing you could do with the condition that you were in. And when at last it was absolutely clear that there was nothing else that could happen inside of that situation, there was nothing else that your mind could do except for just set it down. And when it set it down, for the first time you were able to see into what you had been struggling with. It became clear to you that you were struggling not with what you had thought you were struggling with. What you were struggling was to maintain your sense of yourself. That's what you are struggling for. To keep some dignity, or to somehow or other prove that you weren't undignified. Whatever the matter was inside of the human being, the struggle goes on and on until in these instances where a crisis cannot be resolved by the individual who is in it. And then something else altogether happens. And what happens is that man or that woman simply ceases to be that man or that woman. They can't tell you where that man or woman went. They can't tell you how that man or woman exited from their life. But they know from the foundation of themselves, through the experience of being unable to escape and unable to overcome, that what formerly was their trouble is their trouble no more. They are free of it. And that's what we're interested in here. Because we can see in these little instances in our lives that over and over again, we don't really win the struggle. All we do is change what we struggle with. It's this identity one day, this problem another, this person the next. This self-concern, this fear, this string of weeds that grows up there in the garden of yourself and that every day demands your attention. And very much to the point, I don't know if you can see how often you move from one particular feeling of yourself into another feeling of yourself, not because you chose to move into this or that feeling in a new way, but because the conditions around you changed and then you found yourself feeling this or that way about your life. Do you understand that? No one says to themselves, today I'm going to wake up and be depressed. But they wake up in a room, they wake up in a world, they wake up to the din of a struggle that was there the day before, and all they can do is find themselves defined by that which their mind perceives as being who they are. And then they struggle with that perhaps maybe one day or 50 years, or maybe they never escape it. And then something changes, not because of their struggle, but just because it changes. And now there's a completely different self looking at a new set of things to struggle with. And all that struggle is for nothing. Really, that's the point of the first part of the talk. It's for nothing. Absolutely for nothing.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
And do you know how hard it is for an individual to look at what they... Will you think of something that you struggle with on a daily basis? Please do. How about wanting people to see you in a certain way? How about hoping that family will respect you or return to you? How about the drive to become something special? Achieve certain powers or possessions, win this or that. Please, will you name something that is the source of a struggle for you every single day? And then when you name it for yourself, will you look and see that although that struggle may have a different name, the same exact sense of feeling that you have in yourself has been present since the whole thing began? And because of how much there's invested in that struggle, can you see that literally you are afraid to stop struggling, even though you know that your struggles provide nothing except a kind of sensation of yourself? This is the truth. You know, people have so much invested in what they have called their lives. All of us. Wanting to be seen in a certain way. Talk about a struggle. What have you won? Even when you manage to get people to see you momentarily in a certain light, what have you won? You know what you've won? Nothing. And you know why you know you've won nothing? Because any room you walk into, the struggle starts again. Every time you're with people, the war is on. Not between you and them, but between you and what you believe you have to accomplish in those relationships in order to sustain that sense of yourself. So what we're going to look at is first a bit of conclusive evidence, and we've been presenting it, that this self, this nature, this you, whatever your name is, it exists to struggle. It is in itself the perpetual namer. It is always telling you who and what you have to be. It always pictures for you the prize. And then as soon as it pictures the prize, it sets you out to struggle with the conditions that are necessary in order to obtain it. The idea being that if you could get your hands on the prize of approval or power or possessions, if you could just wrap your hands around that which that self has promised you would bring an end to this unhappiness, that would be the end of the struggle. And that self has never, even when you have through hell and high water gone and obtained the very thing that it said would provide you that, was powerless to put you in the position where the struggle came to an end, because all it could do, because it's its nature, is come up with the very next thing that you have to go and struggle with. Because that's its nature. That's its nature. And you don't need to be a spiritual giant. In fact, throw the word spiritual out as far as I'm concerned. You can see the evidence of it in your own life. And if you could see the evidence of it in your own life as we're describing it, and I'm not describing anything fancy, I'm talking about the basic nuts and bolts of a certain kind of bitter life that human beings have, because they're always trying to get through something, to achieve something, to become something. What would happen if you actually, clearly recognized that all that presently motivates you is what is killing you? Now, too strong a word, killing you? I don't think it is, actually. Because, you see, what kills us is that which takes from us the possibility of a completely different order of life. And whether or not there is another order of life, this is so important to hear. Whether or not there is another order of life for the speaker makes no difference at all, because as far as I'm concerned, all human beings can do is imagine another order of life. They may see pieces of it, evidences of it, intuit it here and there, and we talk about that all the time. But the intuition of a different order of life and the actual transformation of oneself into the realization of that, those are as distant as the stars and the oceans that reflect them. So this is our problem, because the hard work, what's paramount, is not imagining ourselves to be different human beings, but see what has become of us because of our imagination. Because where else does the struggle lie other than in the time that is produced between this idea of who I must be, what I must get, and what I think myself to be? What else is that struggle apart from this imagination that runs rampant inside of a human being, describing him to himself, her to herself, in very distinct and often pleasing, but yet sometimes very painful, depending on the type, images, so that all of life is this struggle to somehow keep in place everything so that nothing betrays the sense of oneself. And I'm saying that if you want to be a different human being, you are going to have to deliberately betray the part of you that has been betraying you. Because it is betraying you. I tell you, see, this is the part of the problem is that I know and I speak certain words that you can't get them. You don't understand them. I tell you that every time your mind tells you you have a problem that you have to solve or you're going to lose something and you're in pain over it, you've been betrayed. Every time. Every time. In fact, every time you think about yourself, you've been betrayed. Every time. But to say it is one thing and to see it is another. So let's look at what it takes. Let's look at what we can discover to help ourselves understand this. So I have a story to tell you. Take a nice deep breath. Somewhere deep in the rainforest in South America, there was a vine on the jungle floor, struggling for its life. I mean, it was in a biddle. That was bitter battle. It was in a bitter battle every day for several days. It was trying as all of its power, it was trying to figure out how to be more powerful than the forest floor creepers that were interfering with its wish to spread out. The forest floor creepers, they didn't care anything about the wish of this vine. All they wanted was to be jungle floor creepers and take over the jungle floor like creepers do. And this poor vine, it was getting weak. You should have seen it. Because when it wasn't struggling with the forest floor, when it wasn't struggling with the forest floor creepers, and I'll never use those words in that order again, it was doing push-ups to strengthen itself so that it would be stronger the next day so that it could do better in the struggle with the... Right. That's how I'm going to get around those words. But that wasn't the only problem. It was turning very, very sickly. And in case you don't know what a single... And in case you don't know what a sickly jungle vine looks like, it starts to turn white and become emaciated. And our jungle vine, who is the hero of our story, who was in the battle with the... was becoming more and more sickly. And one day, when it was just about fully exhausted, trying to prepare itself to become stronger and stronger, it kind of rolled over on its vine back, really fed up and weary with fighting. When a great macaw... You know what a macaw is? Beautiful bird, big beak. When a great macaw said, "Ah!" And I will not do the macaw voice. What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing, silly jungle vine? And the Jungle Vine said, "Well, what do you think I'm doing, Great Macaw? I'm trying to get strong enough to overcome these
forest floor creepers.
Because don't you see, if I don't get strong enough, I'm going to lose everything to them. I'm going to lose myself." And the great macaw looked at the jungle vine and it said, "Silly vine, don't you know? Don't you understand?" And the vine said, "What?" And the macaw said, "You're a climbing vine. You don't belong on the jungle floor. Your task isn't to struggle and fight with the That's not your job. That's not your world."
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
Your world is at the top of these trees where you can have the rich sunlight and the water. Because then you'll be nourished and you'll be strong. But you'll be strong enough by the time you reach halfway to that you'll have forgotten altogether about the forest floor creepers. It isn't where you belong. We don't belong in the world in which we presently live. Now, I don't mean that we don't belong on this earth. And I don't mean that we don't belong in an office someplace, if that's our chosen work. I'm not saying that we don't belong in a family, and I'm not saying we don't belong to one another. I'm saying that we don't belong to the world within ourselves that is the world we see outside of ourselves, in which every human being, without knowing it, is pit against one another and everything else in a continuous struggle to prove that the self that struggles is greater than what it's struggling with. But the question is, and it's a deep question and an important question, if you can see it, is that, well, what's the parallel then? Here's this jungle and the forest floor creepers and the darkness of the forest floor. One can see it in their mind's eye. And here's this idea of a vine that mistook itself to be something that's to be in competition on the jungle floor when it was created to live in the treetops. And so it's simple. The mind can use imagination and feel in a right way what it would be like to just simply abandon the forest floor and get up there in the treetops where the sun is bright and nothing to wrestle with because you're where you belong. But it's another thing for a human being to begin to realize that they've been in the wrong place. Now, what does that mean, in the wrong place? Because again, I'm not talking about being in this world. We are in this world. To be in the wrong place means to be living in the wrong person. In you. The wrong person. The mistaken person. Because it's the mistaken person that believes that somehow or other there's value to misery. It's the mistaken person that believes there's value to fear. It's the mistaken person that believes that struggling with suffering, by naming what one must do to overcome it, is the same thing as achieving a world in which suffering won't be anymore. Because what we can see, if we will, is that what we call rising above ourselves is imagining for ourselves a world where the creepers don't exist. That's what we call rising above ourselves. That's what we call climbing, is acquiring. That's for human beings. Climbing and acquiring, they're synonymous words. Acquire better relationships. Acquire more money. Acquire a place where I can be left alone. You fill in the blanks and we equivocate. We make equal in our minds the idea of rising with realizing what our imagination tells us will bring us to that. And if we've learned anything in our studies, anything in even in the smallest way that you're able to watch yourself during the day, you can see that all the mind knows to do as it enters a struggle is to try to figure out how to rise above it by acquiring powers. And when it can't acquire the powers that it believes will help it overcome what it struggles with, it either abandons the struggle or simply comes up with something else to do toward it so that it can just keep alive the idea of this person who is one day going to escape himself, escape the world of himself. The self that imagines a way to escape the world of itself creates just another world that it will have to escape. That's the rule. So the question becomes, if we understand it, then how does one rise above oneself? What does it mean to rise above oneself? If the whole of my person, and by the way, this is the biggest problem that every one of you have. You see, you're sure that in your present person and who you take yourself to be, that already present there is the power that you need to be different, to end these struggles. You're convinced of it because that's how thought works. But what you don't see is that thought forever produces the problem first and then tells you what powers you need to overcome it. Can you tell me a power you're looking for that isn't defined by a problem that came to you first? And the truth is, you can't. So when you see that every power that you search for, seek, is itself something that was suggested to you by a problem that your own mind produced as it sought out to somehow or other overcome whatever it was you said you had to do or become, then what does one do? What does one do when one realizes that there's no power on this earth that they can have that will allow them to rise? Which brings us to the next story. Take a nice deep breath. Now you're going to have to do a little stretching here. I don't mean physically. Because our story is about a water drop. Yep, a water drop. Now, I know that it may be hard to identify with a water drop. But has anyone ever called you a drip? Boom. Once there was a water drop. And for the first part of its life, which by the way is a really long life, it didn't have many problems. Because it was in this great world that it lived in, which we will come to find out is an ocean. And it was able to kind of go anywhere. And as long as it could go anywhere, as long as it moved along, all the time, by the way, convincing itself that it was choosing to move this direction or go up or go down, that life wasn't a problem. But one day, for the good fortune of this water drop, the various waves and currents in the ocean that it lived in brought it near to the coastline. And it was when it began to become close to the coastline that this little drop of water began to have some problems. And the reason it began to have some problems is because all of a sudden it would find itself being rushed along. You know, this sitting there minding its own business there in the water, and all of a sudden it'd feel this something come along and kind of get it, carry it along, and start to move faster and faster, and then all of a sudden it would feel itself being lifted up in the air, and all of a sudden there'd be a lot of white stuff and foamy stuff all around, and then there'd be a big crash. And then it'd be somewhere on this strange place that wasn't anything like anything it knew, gasping because it didn't belong there, and then struggling to get back into whatever its brothers were doing, which was to get back wherever they'd come from. That's called the wave. But that wasn't its only problem, because as soon as it got back to where it wanted to get to, all of a sudden it felt like it was being drawn out someplace. And it was clear to it that it didn't want to just be taken someplace. It didn't feel natural just to be pulled along the way it was being pulled along. And so it kind of started struggling with what was pulling it that way. No more finished the struggle with it when it was pulling it that way, then all of a sudden it would start to feel a change. And we started thinking, yes, look at the power I have. I'm no longer going in the direction I was going. And all of a sudden, that certain little tiny change started to move into a great movement again. Now it also starting to move too much, too fast, starting to rise up, starting to get in that white stuff again, and crash on the shore again. And it didn't want to be there. So this was its life for 44,000 years. And it took that long because the little drop of water began to actually feel like something was wrong with the fact that it had to go wherever it was, that whatever it was taking it. It didn't seem right to it. Why can't I have my own life? Why do I have to be part of whatever it is that crashes on this, whatever that is, that strange place? And then why do I have to be sucked back? I don't like being sucked back. How many of you like being sucked into stuff? Do I need to make this connection for you? Sucked into depression, sucked into fear, sucked into worry, sucked into compromising yourself by doing something that you know isn't right for yourself or others. So a little drop of water began to ask questions. And who did it have to talk to? All I had was other little drops of water. But one day, because I'm running out of time, one day, it wasn't just washed up wherever it used to be washed up, which was the sand, where it felt like it was going to lose its life, because it was feeling like it would lose. It's just drawn into this great emptiness. Instead of that, it smashed up onto a rock. Didn't know it was a rock, but he knew it wasn't the sand. I'm trying to put you in the mindset of the water drop. And the water retreated because the tide was going out. And the little drop of water now was thinking, I want to go back. I don't want to be in this little world is that I'm in. When a voice came to it, it said, "You're awfully anxious, little drop of water." "What's anxious?" it said. "Well, look at how you're struggling here." "I know, but I don't want to be here. This isn't right." And the voice said, "Well, where do you want to go?" I want," it said, as best it can understand it, "I want to have a life where I go is where I want to go."
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks 4 times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
I want to have a life where what I do is what I want to do. Because for a long time now, I haven't been able to go where I want to go when I want to go there, and I haven't been able to do what I want to do when I do it. In fact, I've begun to discover that I have no life of my own. And I don't even know what that means, said the little water drop. But I know what it means not to have that. And the voice said, "Well, come over here." The little water drop made its way over to the edge of the rock, and there was a starfish, and that's who was talking to the little drop of water. And the starfish said, If you want what you say you want, then you have to go up." And the little drop of water said, "What do you mean up? What's up? Where is up? What does that mean, up? Up, what do you mean? Up, up, up." It was an obnoxious little drop of water. And the starfish said, "Well, I can't explain it to you any more than that. But I'll tell you how you can know." He said, "You'll see in a short time, you'll be out of this little pool that you're in. Because that's the nature of things. Now, translation for you. Every day you get caught in little eddies and little pools, dashed against the rocks, run into the sand, moved along by the current of life that you take to be your own, that isn't your own, but that is simply life moving as it must because of the moon and because of the planets and because of the social conditioning and all the rest of the things that are wrapped up inside of a human being, thinking that he's choosing all along what it is that he does and is, when he has never chosen what he does and is. All he's done is explain to himself where he lands." The starfish said, "What you must do, little drop of water, is you must stay right near the surface of the water." "Well, why do I need to stay near the surface of the water?" He said, "Because that's the only way up." "What's going to happen?" "I can't tell you. You can only find out for yourself." And sure enough, little starfish wasn't done talking to the little drop of water when a big wave came, picked up the little mullet, little drop of water, and all of a sudden there it was, struggling, going back, and already forgetting, already thinking, "No, I don't want to go that way. I want to go the other way," struggling, struggling, struggling. And then it remembered, "Wait a minute. The starfish said, go to the surface. But I don't know what the surface is." But I know it must be up, and I do know what up is, and so it made its way to the surface of the ocean. And when it made its way to the surface of the ocean, all of a sudden it felt the worst thing it ever felt in its life. Because for the first time in the little drop of water's life, it felt the light. It felt the sun. It had never felt anything like that before. And it was terrified of it because the very presence of the sun caused this little drop of water suddenly to feel like it was losing itself. And losing itself isn't what the little drop of water had in mind when it talked about having its own life. So it dived right back as deep as it could. And it spent another 1,000 years washing back and forth in the currents. But it became every day increasingly evident that there was no life the way that it knew in its heart. And this is something, you know, no one on this earth can tell another human being anything about what it means to make real changes in themselves. They can only point to the evidence for the need of it and then show them that it's possible. And in this instance, I'm going to break into my own story for a second here to give you an idea of something. You know, all around us, we see evidence every day of worlds that are interacting with one another, that are interpenetrating one another. Only we're not conscious of it. We don't see how literally the sun and the oxygen and the carbon dioxide and the plants and the flowers and the green, and we don't see how in all of that is in a constant state of exchange of one order of life being given into another so that another can be born. We don't see the constant exchange. But that constant exchange is there. And it's evidence that the barriers that we see as being real, by the way, which is meaning thought, whatever thought sees, you see, do you understand? Thought cannot see into anything. Thought cannot see into anything. It is impossible for thought to see into something. All thought can do is look at what it imagines, and then as it considers that image that it has produced, it kind of experiences in thought the content of what it has imagined, but it can't see into it. Thought can't see into anything, and yet we can see properly with our minds the possibility of this other kind of life in which everything is in an exchange. And this is what the little drop of water was about to learn. Little by little by little, it would bring itself up to the surface. And as it would bring itself up to the surface, it could feel itself, because of the sunlight, going through something that it could not know anything about. And after a long time, it finally rose to the surface and stayed there long enough for what to happen? For it to become a new form. For it to become something that was always latent in it, always potential in it, but that it could never know about until it had finally expired the life of a little drop of water in an ocean being carried around by currents and believing that it was choosing its own path. Now, what I'm asking you to see here in this story is that every day, if you're even slightly sensitive in the right way, you can feel the currents. You can feel the pull of thoughts and feelings. You can feel it's a virtual pull. I mean, a real pull. You wake up in the morning, there comes the wave. Oh, I have to do this, and then the struggle starts. Then you're sitting someplace and here comes the current, that down eddy, and it starts to pull you down, and you can actually feel yourself sinking. But you don't ever actually experience the sinking, because you begin to struggle with the sinking and telling yourself what's causing it, as though you have power through being able to name for yourself that which controls your life. And what is incumbent on a human being is in those moments where they begin to feel themselves in those current, being compromised, being pulled along, being defined. Because don't you see that before there can be a struggle, there has to be something that defines you? Can you use your minds properly? You can't start to struggle with a problem until the mind defines the problem and then defines you according to it. That in those moments, if you could simply catch it, and then just as simple as it can be said, rise to the surface of yourself. Rise to the surface of yourself. What does it mean, rise to the surface of yourself? It means you begin to try to make the little swim upwards. You begin the proper struggle. Because it is, and when I say struggle, it's not really a struggle. Because the minute that you actually see and experience, recognize something's pulling on you, something's trying to drag you this way and that way, and you simply rise to the surface of yourself, it means that you, for the first time, that moment, you understand that you're not meant to be in that world. That's the best it can be said. You don't belong in the world of thought trying to solve the problems that thought makes. You don't belong in the world of negative emotions trying to escape them by coming up with what you call positive emotions. You don't belong in that world. Your recognition that you don't belong in that world is the beginning of rising above it. And rising above it does not mean telling yourself who and what you will be. Rising above it means, for the first time, beginning to properly subject yourself to the light that shows you the world you have called your own. Because the more that you see the world that you have called your own, the more you see that isn't your world. I'm going to say it again. The more you see the world that you have called your own, the rushing, worried, frightened, self-pitying, dark, whatever, the more you see that ambitious world that you've called your own and you see that there can be no victory in that place, the more you see that's not your world. Because by the light that you have risen towards, by your willingness and wish to awaken to yourself, you're actually bringing yourself to the point where that which already lives above you can change your awareness of yourself, change the way you know yourself. Change the way you know yourself, not the way you think about yourself, but the way you know yourself. And it is that new knowing that is the transformation, that is that which brings you from the one world you have been a victim of, a captive of your own mistaken identity, into a world where you no longer need an identity at all, because you have been brought into a much broader world without the need for that, someplace already right, whole and good. Remember the exercise. You rise into the awareness of yourself when you feel yourself being pulled along by a current of any thought or any feeling.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polanski of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.